At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
More quarterback news around the National Football League. We have a new week that begins. It's week number 9 tonight on this Thursday as we welcome you to hour number 2 of the Early Line here across the Spiz Grizz Network, a network that is booming as of this Thursday morning. Ka-ching! He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. DRS, as we get ready for a new week, of course, quarterback news, as we just brought, Jordan Love still says it's realistic for him to play on Sunday. We shall see. Bryce Young is going to start once again for Carolina. Good luck. The big news, though, this week in the 2023 NFL quarterback draft class, that, of course, was Anthony Richardson. Now riding the pine in Indianapolis, here was what we heard from Shane Steichen, the Colts head coach, yesterday. Quote, Joe will be our quarterback going forward. Joe gives us the best chance to win right now. Not giving up on Anthony Richardson. It was my decision. That's good, Shane. Anthony Richardson also spoke yesterday, DRS, and said, Shane didn't really explain why he is now going to be on the bench. And then Michael Pittman Jr., star wideout for Indianapolis, said he found out of the quarterback shuffle on social media. Good things happening in Indy.
Well, let's go one by one for these things. Joe Flacco does give them the best chance because Joe Flacco has been a very good quarterback for the past year and a half. And if you're an offensive coordinator, the first thing you want is your offense to be run correctly. Now, sometimes you don't execute it. That's one thing. But you want to say, okay, look, the play call is correctly here. The reads were made. The throw just might not have been there. Also, let's go through with Anthony Richardson and what we're talking about for him. He's been absolutely horrific on the field. So for Anthony Richardson, say what you want. Justin Fields was like, you know what? I sort of agree with this. Like, I haven't been playing great football enough where there's no chance that Russell Wilson is going to play. Have an honest assessment of yourself. For Anthony Richardson, be like, I played in all these games. I have no idea why I'm not going to be the starting quarterback. Because you stink, kid. That's why you can't be. The NFL's win right now, and you're actively losing games because you can't command the quarterback position. It's about running the offense. And as I said again, yes, execution is key, but just running the offense the way it's supposed to be ran is a problem right now. So if you're looking down the road, maybe he can get back in. But also keep in mind, organizations don't share a lot. Good organizations, I should say. And I'm going to put the Colts in there. There's more to this here because you just don't cut bait after a number of starts with a kid with that much talent in his second year in an injury-prone first year. Do you know what we're probably seeing, Ben? Just speculation on my part. You're in a meeting doing chalk talk. He doesn't understand the defense. He doesn't understand the playbook here. He's not putting in all of that work effort because you don't just do that. I understand, like, yes, it's about winning. Yes, you don't want to lose your locker room. And a coach wants to put his best foot forward. But from an organizational standpoint, from an owner to a front office general manager, right down to the coach, their future should be, we drafted a kid number 3. We have to make it work. Now, I respect the decision to say we respect everybody in this locker room, and it's clear that Joe Flacco can play. But I have a feeling that there's way more underlying that we're not hearing about. And certainly, they want to try to fix this internally. But there's got to be more because they're not 2-6. They're not 1-7. They're right in striking distance for the Texans. And if the Texans lose tonight and the Colts win on Sunday, you're right there. And they're saying that Joe Flacco gives them a better chance. We're not hearing the full story here, Ben.
Yeah, there is no doubt, DRS. And again, at Indy's outlook, 8.5 is the win total. The over is +116. it's the same exact price right now for the Colts to see the postseason. Because the AFC wildcard race that we expected to be an absolute gauntlet filled with teams trying to get to 10 or 11 wins is not. And Joe Flacco brought the Browns to the postseason in 11 wins last year. Joe Flacco this year, in the three games he has played a majority of for Indianapolis, they have won two of the three and lost a close divisional game against the Jags in Jacksonville when they were down two touchdowns midway through the fourth quarter, and Flacco led them all the way back to at least tie the game. There is no doubt that Joe Flacco, in this veteran experienced role he has developed the last few years, is a better quarterback at this moment than Anthony Richardson, but you really do almost feel for AR, because DRS, you mentioned it when we were discussing Bryce Young, it's the situation, and Anthony Richardson's situation is not on Indianapolis's fault, but he played four games last year, two fully healthy, shoulder injury to sideline his season. The lumps that we are seeing him take right now, and he was a huge development piece in his full year as a starter, his only one at Florida, 53.8% completion percentage, despite the arm strength and the wow factor that he had and the athleticism that very few people, let alone quarterbacks, possess, he was going to take some time to work through. And often completions and accuracy and efficiency and understanding concepts in defense, DRS, does not get better as you take the leap to the National Football League from the college ranks. And Anthony Richardson is going through that right now. 48.5 is his completion percentage this season. He has played in six full games. In five of the six, 10 completions or less, like we saw on Sunday, 10 of 32 against Houston. And Donnie, there's been some of the correlation, or at least the comparison, Anthony Richardson's slow start to his career because of the body shape and size and frame and stature and athleticism to that of Josh Allen in his first 2 years in the NFL. I think that's a very large bridge to try to cross. But I do think Anthony Richardson was always going to need time and experience, game reps, to take those lumps and learn from it. I'm not sure he's going to see that now moving forward in Indianapolis.
No, it'll be tough to crack that starting lineup again, specifically if Joe Flacco is going to keep you in that playoff race. But let's understand this. Like, Caleb Williams goes to Chicago, and I still don't think it's going to work out for Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron. Those were questionable decisions. But you can't say, like, well, he's going with a guy. Like, if you don't know who Shane Steichen is, go back to the Philadelphia Philly years where he had Jalen Hurts and turned him from a second-round draft pick, not really too sure. He looks like a running quarterback, to a flat-out superstar MVP-caliber player that was sensational in that Super Bowl run. This is the perfect guy. Like, when you get an athlete, at quarterback, I'm pretty sure when they drafted Anthony Richardson, the selling point on Richardson too was, well, I was like, Shane Steichen's like, you see what I did with Jalen? I'm going to turn you into an absolute menace out here with this offense. And he wasn't able to do that. But credit Shane Steichen to say, I have an offense that's built with an athletic quarterback, but I'm going to win games with Gardner Minshew and Joe Flacco. This guy can do it. So if Anthony Richardson can't succeed in Shane Steichen's offense, that's a tough look for Anthony Richardson.
And a lot of people pointed to Josh Allen in 2020. He got Brian Daboll. It's been one. All the success in Western New York has happened. Shane Steichen's that offensive mind for Indianapolis. Yeah. An unfortunate situation, but Indy has made the right call. You see their outlook. You see what is expected. The Colts can be a playoff team and very well might if Joe Flacco steadies the ship. And they are not all that far behind the Houston Texans, even in the AFC South. Heck, they played Houston week 18 on that Saturday night last year. Win, and you won the division. It was C.J. Stroud and the Texans to take advantage, and thus all of the optimism. Houston is 6-2 this year, DRS, but not exactly overly optimistic entering this Thursday night. But by nowhere near as pessimistic as that of the New York Jets, a 2-6 football team that is riding a 5-game losing skid. And here we are once again, Mr. Right Side, dealing with the Jets. Now a 2.5-point favorite to start off week number 9 on this Thursday night. Yes, short week for the Texans. Yes, it's on the road. Yes, we learned earlier this week, Stephon Diggs has torn his ACL and is out for the remainder of this season. But we find ourselves on this Thursday with the market working toward Aaron Rodgers and gangrene, expecting the Jets to win a football game. Do you think the Jets will finally deliver on that expectation tonight?
Yes, I do think the Jets win this game. And this is the epitome of the Thursday night stretch. We have an injured team coming in Houston at wide receiver, which leaves you just with Tank Dell. Mixon's been fantastic. Love their quarterback, but I'll keep it simple here. That long travel. And Minnesota can't lose to a bad Rams team, can they, on Thursday? Oh, Minnesota did lose that game, and the Texans will lose tonight to the New York Jets.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. We'll talk about it more next after the break here on SportsGrid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's a new week in the National Football League, but for the last month, we've been asking the same question. Can the New York Jets win a football game when they are expected to? Donnie, you've been, I don't want to say on the Jets bandwagon, but you've had the belief that New York could win football games in must-win opportunities in primetime in these marquee matchups the last few weeks. That Monday night matchup in MetLife, they were a slight underdog against the Bills at home. Lost that game, found active ways to lose it. Then Sunday night, 2 weeks ago in the Steel City, they were the favorites on the road against Russell Wilson and Pittsburgh in his Steelers debut. Lost that football game after getting shut out in the second half. Okay, tough competition. They're going to go into Foxborough, and even if they don't cover as a touchdown favorite, they'll walk out at least with an outright victory against the Pats. I heard you on Pro Football Today on Sunday saying you expected that to be the case. And yet again, the Jets find a new and historic low and a way to lose a football game. So what is different this time, DRS? Why are the New York Jets, as a 2.5-point home favorite tonight to kick off week number 9, actually going to win against the Houston Texans?
Well, finally, we're starting to see that Thursday night vampire show up, which means the last thing an NFL team wants to do, and this has been me for, you know, since we had the advent of Thursday night football, the first thing I do, particularly with the Eagles, I'm a fan of, where is that Thursday night football game? If it's home, that is a massive win on your scheduling for that season. And you're coming with the Houston Texans, Ben. This would be completely different for me. Number one, if we were healthy, talking about we, the Texans, at wide receiver, and if this game was played on Sunday, I'd be nowhere near the Jets here. But the minute I saw this line come out, I was all over the Jets. Because the one thing, say what you will, it is a calamity. And could they lose the game? Absolutely. They're not favored by 14.5 points. It's 1.5 now up to 2.5. But there's a reason why they're the favorite. It's hard for an NFL team, Ben, to play on a Sunday, then travel and be injured and go on the road, which means you barely have any time to practice and you just show up to play. Whereas the Jets, who are in New England, that's a quick trip home. Yes, they did lose that game. Yes, they were embarrassed. But they're home on a Thursday. And also, some things also could slide into it. Well, you know, other things. Mixon's a great running back. It's MetLife Stadium, the Meadowlands. It's basically November. Is it 32 degrees? Are there flurries blowing around? It's 73 degrees tonight with no chance of rain and light winds here. So you're looking at an offensive passing game that should excel. And the Jets, great wide receivers. The Jets, solid offensive line. The Jets, multiple options in the backfield. The Jets have Aaron Rodgers. So there is still that belief that they can put this together. Am I calling the Jets to make the playoffs? No, I'm not. But circumstances sometimes will influence your bets. Thursday night football, I've been saying for years, and it has changed a little bit this year, I'll be honest. It's either the home team or no team on a Thursday night because of how far of a disadvantage you are put behind. Same way with the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are a bad football team, but they played back-to-back weeks in New England. They waited on the New England Patriots and smashed them, and they're a terrible football team. But sometimes you look at the travel, it's hard to overcome the team you're playing and the travel at the same time, and that's just the way I see it for tonight's game.
Yeah, I get it. And it makes a lot of sense, right? The Texans are also not world beaters this year, despite a 6-2 record. They are 3-4-1 against the spread. Their two top targets, Nico Collins, has been on the shelf for a few weeks with a hamstring injury. We just learned that Steph Diggs is now out for the remainder of this season. That was part of the burgeoning optimism, if you will, for Houston entering the year, not just the AFC South title and a playoff berth and victory in CJ Stroud and D'Amico Ryan's rookie year in the organization, but the acquisition of Steph Diggs has not really happened for the Texans, at least as smooth as you might expect. But DRS, as an underdog with C.J. Stroud since the start of last season, only once this year, by the way, and they did cover, 8-4 against the number. Six of those eight covers in outright victory. Houston has gone under in 6 of 8 games. Dare I say, the better defense tonight is on the side of Houston and not that of the New York Jets, who have lost 5 consecutive games. They have not covered in any of these 5 straight losses, and they have gone over in their last 3, allowing at least 23 points in all 3 of those games. And Donnie, you said this on PFT on Sunday, and I completely agreed with the point. If Aaron Rodgers is serviceable on Sunday, the Jets beat the Patriots. He was. No turnovers, more than 220 yards, 2 touchdowns. And yet, the Jets became the first team in NFL history out of 751 potential scenarios to score 20-plus points in a game, limit their opponent to 250 yards or less, and not turn the football over and still lose the game outright. I'm not betting on the Jets. In fact, I bet on the Texans early this week on the money line and have bet the total to the under of 42.5 as well.
Yeah, there's 2 ways that you can play out the Jets in the way they've been. If they made a couple kicks, if they actually got Aaron Rodgers not throwing pick 6 against the Vikings, you might be looking at, the Jets could actually win this division. But at the same time, I use that Bill Parcells analogy. No, you are what your record says you are. Forget about how for you sure did things in games and the ball bounced the wrong way for you a couple times and you had a terrible kicker. It still happened here. So the belief is with the Jets in the fourth quarter, they're probably going to find a way to lose this. But sometimes for me, it's just more circumstantial tonight. I'm not getting the best effort here, the Texans. And you might be right. The Texans technically do have a better defense than the Jets on paper because the statistics show it out. We'll see if it plays out tonight, but that's the reason I'm betting this way tonight. Also, just reading the lines here. Most people will be shocked and say, wait a second, the Texans, they're getting points. I'll just take them here. There's a rhyme. There's a reason for why these spreads work out that way. Is it always you go chase down a line and it works? No, not necessarily, but I just like the spot the Jets are in tonight. And if they do lose, then they lose again and it's on me. So there you go.
There is a rhyme and reason. You're right. The odds makers expected the New York Jets to be a double-digit win football team. And at least on paper, they're probably better than they were earlier in the season. They added Devontae Adams. Hasn't made much of a difference. And Donnie, this was one of the things for me that I was going to follow all year. After week 1 being a road underdog in Santa Clara, would the Jets continue to be an underdog as they were in a large portion of the first 3 years of the Robert Saleh era, which began in 2021? The Jets have only been favored 14 times. Tonight will be game number 15. 7-7 straight up. 5-8-1 against the spread this year, both 2-3 straight up and ATS. We'll talk overall outlook for both of these teams and the players that will impact the outcome tonight as well in MetLife. It could get spooky. It's a warm Halloween in the Tri-State. Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So, Donnie Wrightside, you believe the New York Jets are going to win on Thursday Night Football, at least outright, even if they do not cover now as a 2.5-point home favorite against the 6-2 Houston Texans. The updated outlook for gangrene, 6.5 is the win total. Not great. It was 9.5, heavily juiced to the over in the preseason. Plus 590 is that playoff price. The New York Jets now heavily expected to miss out on the postseason for a 14th consecutive year, continuing their historic and by far longest active postseason drought in the NFL. If the Jets win tonight, does it change your outlook at all for the rest of the way that New York will now be 3-6 at the midway point of this NFL campaign?
No, they have enough talent to win football games on a Sunday-to-Sunday basis. Yes, they do. But we are be foolish to say they just lost 5 straight games as if they can rip all 5 straight games and win all 5 straight close games. We know that's not going to happen. They might not beat the Texans tonight. Then they got to go on the road to play the Cardinals, who we know will fight you. And if you get the Cardinals on the right Sundays where they feel like playing, they can certainly beat you outright. The Seahawks are a good football team. The Dolphins got their quarterback back. You see where I'm going with this? We're not lining them up as if they are 6-2 at this point, say, The benefit of the doubt is earned because they're winning close games against good football teams. They're not doing that. So even if they win tonight, I'm not going to change my assessment. Now, granted, I'm more of a week-to-week handicapper as opposed to a futures handicapping better. So yep. I'll look to them the same way I'm doing it tonight because the season outlook, I don't like it for the Jets, but I do like it, the outlook for tonight. But this team has lost games in crazy ways, which who says they're not going to continue to do that, Ben?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of how I feel when it comes down to it, DRS. So as we look at the numbers tonight, the quarterback comparison, C.J. Stroud without both Nico Collins and Steph Diggs. Nico Collins expected to return in a few weeks. Of course, Stephon Diggs out for the remainder of this season. Aaron Rodgers, who entered last week in New England with the second most pass attempts in the NFL at the age of 40, that's not a good sign. Only 28 last week, DRS, and just barely under tonight's number of 233 and a hook by the half. He finished with 233 yards and two touchdowns. If the Jets are going to win tonight at home in MetLife, what do they need out of Aaron Rodgers?
They need probably two touchdown passes tonight because that passing game has to be effective. They got a pretty good set of cornerbacks here for Houston, but a little bit struggling there on the back end with the safeties. And you also have another week with Davante Adams in your building. We saw Garrett Wilson break out. He's a 100-yard wide receiver if he was the number one. So you're expecting just, again, look at the numbers up there, right? 233 and a half, 1.5 touchdown passes, which is not even juice. You're getting positive money on the over. Average Aaron Rodgers, when you come into a football game over the past decade, is like, yeah, I expect 250 and two touchdown passes every single gets it. That's average Aaron Rodgers, which normally he'd be a 275 plus and 3+ touchdown passes. Yeah. Just give me Aaron Rodgers tonight with one total turnover, whether it be a sack fumble or an interception. That should be good enough to win, which means 225 plus passing and also two touchdown passes as well. Average Aaron Rodgers is all they need tonight.
So when you look at the wide receivers that will receive the football from these quarterbacks, Garrett Wilson, DRS, to your point, five grabs for 113 yards on Sunday in Foxborough against the Patriots. Davante Adams, in his two games with New York, he has been targeted 15 times, but only seven receptions under his receiving yards prop in both games. Will he move the needle at all for this New York offense on this Thursday?
If we're looking for two guys to score touchdowns in the wide receiving game, obviously you would look towards Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson. And good for us, they're both plus money here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, one at plus 155 and one at plus 190. So if I think it's a coin flip on either one of those to score a touchdown, it's actually Garrett Wilson at the plus 190, the guy that I would be looking for. Now, we understand Davante Adams, you want to get him going. You want to get him, you know, multiple targets, obviously early on, but you also want to get him those red zone targets. I can't fault it. So if you're just being, you know what? I think I want to come away with plus money tonight. And if I think Aaron Rodgers throws two touchdowns, how does Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson, not at least one of those guys, catch a touchdown pass? Hard to do, Ben, when it's like minus 145 and minus 125. They're both plus money. So if you take both of Adams and Wilson, I think you're walking away with plus money. And maybe you might be walking away with a 2-0 night.
There will be plenty of more time for the prop perspective in our third hour with Tom Vecchio. Yeah. We'll show you the running backs. Both guys, Joe Mixon and Breece Hall, have been doing it all for both offenses this year. Quickly, DRS. Steph Diggs now out for the year, but Houston is 6-2. Is that ceiling still the same for the Texans' divisional crown and potential AFC title contenders?
It depends what they do to fortify that number two wide receiver. You're not going to get a good as one as you had as Stephon Diggs, which he's been really good for Houston. But if Nico Collins comes back and there's no hamstring injuries, that's a bona fide number one. So that's ceiling for me, Ben. Still there.
Was the NFL's leading receiver before the hamstring injury that has sidelined him for the last few games. Parcello and the Hank next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Now this is going to be fun. A recap of the World Series with Mark Zeno before he transitions to the mouth in the South to break down a college football slate that will start in Big Ten country and a top five tilt. The next half hour, Mark Zeno, is yours, but this next 10 minutes, this is going to be good. We are glad to have you here. Thank you for waking up bright and early after your Yankees faltered last night in the fifth inning and in game number five overall to come up on the short end of the stick in the World Series.
I'd say it's good morning, but it's not good. So I will just say morning. You know, I have twin 9-year-old boys, and we sat down to watch the beginning of the game last night, and I watched my kids jump up and down, screaming at Aaron Judge's home run. They continue to jump up and down at Jazz Chisholm's home run. Heck, they were like, "Dad, I don't want to go to bed. Guess what? Giancarlo Stanton hits a home run. Kids, it's time to go to bed." I put my kids to bed after four innings and a 5-0 lead, and had to explain to them this morning that the Yankees lost that game. And they were as apoplectic as 9-year-olds could be, continually saying, "But Dad, how? Like, how did they lose that game?" And I said, "Well, they played defense like your teammate Jackson in Little League does in right field, a.k.a. they don't."
Slander Jackson.
Okay? That's pretty much what it boils down to. So it was the most disgusting, embarrassing thing. And I think it actually may be more embarrassing than Game 7 in the 04 ALCS, because at least the Red Sox earned it. You know, they just flat out beat the Yankees that night. They flat out beat the Yankees that series. The Yankees didn't beat themselves. They got to Rivera in that series. They out-hit them down the stretch. They out-pitched them down the stretch. Like, bad defense and god-awful managing gave this World Series to the Los Angeles Dodgers on a platter. I am taking something away from it, because the game one was for the Yankees for the taking. Game five, obviously, was there for the taking, and they gave it right back to them. This should be 3-2 heading back to L.A. with Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, then now that is a take right there. But I would not disagree with the idea that the Pinstripes did spoil two elite outings out of Gerrit Cole. But he really can look in the mirror today to figure out why one of those outings was spoiled. Zeno, we'll continue to get to the reaction. But young Jackson, wherever you are in the Atlanta, Georgia area, hey, listen, baseball might not be your sport, pal, but there are other things that you can get to. So, Zeno, let's go to the fifth inning, right? Because as history will tell the tale of this series, as we'll all look back on and focus on, it will be the disastrous defensive output from the New York Yankees in the fifth. Aaron Judge, a routine soft liner to center, just off his glove and on to the outfield grass. Anthony Volpe, a good play to stop the ball, but not a good throw, trying to get the force out at third. And the play, Zeno, that was not recorded as an error actually might be the worst defensive miscue. If you want to blame him 50-50, if you want to say 100 zip, 75-25, it was Gerrit Cole's inability to cover the first base bag. It was a weirdly soft grounder to Anthony Rizzo that he did not charge and perhaps misplayed. Zeno, when you look back on the fifth inning, if you had to point to one thing above all else, what was the gravest mistake the Yankees made?
I mean, God, how do you pick one? You know, I honestly, the most routine and easy play was Judge's, right? If you want to talk about level of egregiousness, that was the easiest out to get out of all of them. Like, the thing about the ground ball to Rizzo was it did, if you look at the replay, it kind of checked on him, had a little English on it, and rolled away from him, which sort of set his footing off, which is why he was flat-footed and not really ready to roll. I'm not making excuses. Anthony Rizzo's got to move his big behind faster.
You know, and well Cole should know better. Jackson might be watching, family-friendly program.
Cole should know better to move. And the scary part is, I don't know if you saw this, there was a side-by-side of Mookie Betts' first inning hit, which was nearly identical to the one in the fifth, a little nubber down to first base, and Cole was in two totally different positions for those two. But again, you know, you're the MVP. You made a great defensive play earlier in left field, running into the wall. That one, to me, was the most egregious because it was the simplest one and the most preventable one from happening, and it changes the entire trajectory of the rest of the inning. It's that first one, you know, again, go back to 03 with Steve Bartman. You forget the booted ball at shortstop that let that door open for the rest of the things to fall apart for the Cubs that year. So the first one is the most important one. It changes everything. It changes the way you pitch to the next batter. It changes the way the count goes. It changes everything. So that's the one to me that I'm just – when I watched, I said there's no way that he closed his glove early and just had that happen.
Let me ask you a question, too. Let's keep it with Aaron Judge. Legacy as a New York Yankee. Still got a long way to go in his career, but when I get back to my Philadelphia fanhood, I look at Donovan McNabb. He's got his number in the rafters here at Lincoln Financial Field. I don't think it should be up there. Donovan McNabb had a lot of joy for me for 1999 right through to 2004 when they lost the Super Bowl. But after that, sort of lost sour taste. The reason I'm asking this question is, as a Yankees fan, which I'm not, what is the Aaron Judge legacy? Because I've watched Donovan McNabb at close to MVP years, but I don't look back at McNabb and say he was an MVP quarterback. I look back and say, when I needed this guy the most, he was nowhere to be found. And again, Judge has a chance to rectify that, but he just won the MVP by having one of the most fantastic seasons you will ever see. But as a Yankee fan, what's that season mean to you at this point now with Aaron Judge?
It means nothing. I mean, look, no one's mad at the contract they gave Aaron Judge. But you get paid to bring championships to town. That's what it is for the Yankees. That's what it is in New York. I mean, you know, he's on a Hall of Fame trajectory, right? I mean, if he's going to hit, if he stays healthy, he's going to hit 500 home runs and end up in Cooperstown at one point in time. But more importantly than Cooperstown, the Yankees fans, go beyond that center field wall to that little place that has all the jersey numbers up there, right? We call that Monument Park to Yankees fans. You know, there is only one person in Monument Park, whose jersey is retired, who does not have a World Series. And that's Don Mattingly. Aaron Judge should not be the second one there. I mean, he's got some time left. He's got to figure out how to get it done. The end of the day, too, you know, Aaron Boone does not need to manage this team any longer. I could beat this drum 1,000 times over. If you follow me on Twitter, X, whatever it's called, you know, I've never wanted a man fired more than I want Aaron Boone fired. For managing this team. Again, inexplicable. Like, why didn't you bring Weaver in last night with a clean inning? If he was going to have to get, like, and again, no Tim Hill. Unreal. The best lefty setup man that they have, the best lefty reliever that they have, doesn't ever get out of the pen, just like he didn't in game one. I can't wrap my head around it. To answer your question, DRS, Michael C. will be forever tainted. Again, Mattingly played in lean years for the Yankees. They didn't make the playoffs every year, right? He made the playoffs once his entire career. Judge has been on playoff teams year in and year out. That's a different perspective. And if he can't get over the hump, Monument Park might be a leap for him too big.
We shall see, Mark Zeno, what the future holds for Aaron Boone. His contract is coming up, team option for 2025. I would expect him to remain after getting the Yankees to their first pennant. Hey, family-friendly show, Jackson might be watching for the first time in 15 years. But you would feel like, Zeno, with how the World Series played out and in the fashion it did, there might be a reshuffling, perhaps also in the roster. Juan Soto, his impending free agency, is ahead this winter. Rather candid yesterday, saying, hey, all 30 clubs might be clamoring for my services this offseason. Zeno, I ask you simply, is Juan Soto a New York Yankee to start 2025 in MLB?
No, Juan Soto is going to be in New York, and the Yankees will see him in June at Citi Field when they play the Mets.
Oh, wow.
Listen. People don't understand this. The Yankees are a team on a budget. Now, it's a budget for the Yankees, which is a lot bigger for other teams. But they are still on a budget. Hal Steinbrenner counts pennies and counts the bottom line. His father counted championships, and that's the ultimate difference.
Would you like to talk some college football up next? I feel like we need to give you a reprieve. You brought the heat, and thank you for doing so. Better than expected. And again, sorry to Jackson. Let's talk Happy Valley. Ohio State, Penn State next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Let's get you set for a new college football weekend. It is week number 10, the first Saturday in November, in a game of the year four. Potential on Saturday afternoon, noon Eastern time kick in State College, Pennsylvania. It's number 3 Penn State. It's number 4 Ohio State. The Buckeyes, a 3.5-point favorite in Happy Valley. Total has worked its way down by a point, 45 and a hook. Zeno, let's start with narrative, because of course narrative is going to factor into this handicap. the outcome and the reaction in a large way. Ryan Day is 2-6 against AP top five teams in his time at the helm of this Ohio State football program. Not good enough. James Franklin is 1-9 against Ohio State during his decade at Penn State, now year number 11, and 3-17 outright against AP top 10 foes. Also, not good enough. So for which coach and program does the narrative sadly continue by the end of Saturday afternoon?
I mean, I don't like the way Ohio State is playing right now. That said, Penn State, if Braden Locke doesn't throw that pick six, I don't know that Penn State wins that game last week. That was just a gut punch, kick in the groin kind of, you know, for Wisconsin backers last week, me being one of them, of course, otherwise I still wouldn't be upset about it. But, you know, I got to give the nod here to Penn State just a little bit, especially with a 3.5. Like, this feels like a field goal game all around. Like, there's nothing about this that doesn't scream it's going to be tight. Ryan Day has always sort of choked in these big moments, particularly on the road. You know, if this game was at the Horseshoe, it would be a completely different conversation. But, you know, you get a 12 o'clock kick, which favors Penn State, I think, more than anything, being in their home turf. And Drew Aller's been really good. You know, he's taking care of the football. I know he was banged up last week. I assume, given this number is where it is, that he's playing again this week. And after two tough road wins, they come back home in a favorable spot. And all of a sudden, the Ohio State offense is starting to look a little bit human. Like, when you look at what happened last week at home against Nebraska, you know, is it the wake-up call that the Buckeyes needed to say, hey, we need to play better? Or is it the reality of, guess what, you're finally playing a team that, you know, you're finally starting to play teams that are of the same ilk of you. No disrespect to Iowa, but on the road, they're not the same team. And Michigan State's offense is not very good, a.k.a. bad, a.k.a. they don't score a ton. So the last 3 weeks, the last 2 weeks, and this week will tell us really what Ohio State is. And I think we find out that Penn State here, even if they get a loss here, it'll be one of those that the committee will look at favorably upon, because they're going to make this, they're going to make life hell for 3 hours for Ohio State on Saturday.
Positives for Penn State: they don't have to go to the airport, which has a short tarmac out there. They don't have to do that at all. And also, negative, though, I disagree on this. I think if this game was a night game and a whiteout game, Ohio State, for me, would be in much more trouble. But let's get to another institution that's in trouble at the quarterback position. That's the Michigan Wolverines taking on Oregon. The opening line, the look ahead, was 10.5 as a favorite towards Oregon, Mark. Now we're seeing 14.5. So over two touchdowns and a total of 45.5. Ooh, Michigan, can they score in this game is the question mark.
Well, you just answered it right there. And you guys know I've said this often. You know how I cut games in half. I talked about it last week with Illinois, that if they couldn't stay within the first half number, they weren't staying within the game. And that's exactly the same case here, because this is not an offense that is built to play catch up. They can't be down by 17 at half and expect to get back-to-back scores, you know, and bring this thing right back together while their defense holds it up against a really good offense. Like, that's just not a game script that's favorable. The only way Michigan can stay within this number is to keep this within 7 points in the first half, and that's the best chance that they have. Oregon looks like a machine right now, you know? I mean, they are just really, really good on both sides of the ball. And Michigan's offense doesn't scare anybody. So at this point in time, you know, there's only one play to take. I would look at Oregon and lay the 7.5 in the first half. And guess what? If they ain't covering then, you know, the possibility is still there that they could pull away late, but it would have to take some level of mistake by Michigan, an interception or a short field or something like that. It gives Oregon a decided advantage. But I wouldn't play Michigan here. I'd lay the 7.5 with Oregon in the first half or pass.
I would go over 45.5. Michigan over in 5 of 6 games this year against Power 4 competition in their 3 games as a dog. Almost unheard of. This will be their 3rd game in the big house as an underdog on Saturday. They've allowed at least 24 total points. And Oregon over in all 3 games, they have laid less than 3 touchdowns. This is 2 touchdowns and the hook, but at least less than 3. Zeno, not many undefeated teams left in college football entering the month of November. Army, however, though, is certainly that. Commander-in-Chief's trophy and that positioning very much at stake, because Air Force lost to Navy and got routed. Now it's Army's time to take on the Falcons. Army, a hefty favorite Can the Black Knights win and cover by more than 3 touchdowns?
Mm.
I mean, it is a sad state of affairs when the best football team in New York is the Army Black Knights. Sorry, Jets and Giants.
Sad.
No, it's not sad, but I mean, it's, you know, listen, I'm happy about the whole thing. I'm not going to lie. Now, that said, I will be open with the audience here and tell everybody I feel like I already made a mistake. I got very giddy earlier in the week when this line came out, and particularly the first half line came out. Now, this thing opened up around 23, 24. It's come down. Why? Because Army being that big of a favorite is sort of ludicrous. Go back to the Air Force versus Navy game. I played Navy first half in that game, -6.5. They easily covered. Why? Because Air Force is one of the lowest scoring teams in the first half in the country, averaging 7.8 points in the first half. Army at home this year, averaging nearly 29 points per game in the first half at home this year. I laid 13.5 with Army, which I feel incredibly gross and disgusting about because there's a lot of ways this could go wrong. It has to follow the game script that has followed for Army the entire year, which is they score at least 21 and they don't allow more than 7, which an Air Force team doesn't score a whole lot more than 7 in the first half here. I would not play Army to cover the entire game. There's a good chance that they can do it, but again, that requires them to be up 24-3 at half and they continue to roll in the second half.
Yeah, Zeno, it's really interesting. This Air Force team, not the Air Force team in the last few years. In fact, the Falcons are the only team in the country that has failed to cover a number this year. 0-7 ATS. Army, meanwhile, has covered in 6 of their 7 wins, all of them this season. More around college football next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Now, Mark Zeno becomes the mouth in the South. He has been here bemoaning his Yankees, and rightfully so. And then we had him preview everything else not in the SEC for Saturday in week number 10 of this college football season. But the mouth in the South is here, and he is ready for his SEC picks. The world's largest outdoor cocktail party is in Jacksonville on Saturday between number 2 Georgia and Florida. One of the great rivalries in this sport, more than 100 meetings between these two. UGA favored by 16.5. Florida showed a little bit of something, though, Zeno, after starting off this year a little bit more peculiar. Can the Gators keep this game within the number in Jacksonville on Saturday?
Doesn't feel like it. Look, outside of the COVID year where Florida is able to win one, Kirby Smart has won 6 of these. So he's won 6 of the last 7. Yeah. And he's done so in really convincing fashion, with the exception of 2019, which was the that was Jake Fromm's year. Every single one of these wins has been by at least 2 scores, 2 touchdowns, that is. So, you know, it's really tough for me to believe that this is a Florida team that can hang with Georgia. This is a fatter number than we're used to seeing, that is for sure. So there is some pause for concern as far as laying a number this big, especially with Florida, you know, on triple revenge here, right? Like they need to win one against you. Billy Napier might be able to save his job by winning this game alone. He's 14-6-1 ATS as a conference underdog. Georgia 4-12 ATS is a favorite of 7 or more when coming off 3 straight wins. You know, the number tends to get a little bit of inflated for the Bulldogs at this point in time. Could it be a little bit of a letdown spot after the big win that Georgia had last time out? Yeah, maybe. But the bye hopefully should neutralize some of that. And I don't think Kirby's going to take his foot off the gas pedal here. And that's the other component to this thing, guys. Come on, Kirby played at Georgia. He knows what this game means. He doesn't take it lightly. There is no softening on Florida. There is no, like, hey, guys, let's pull up here. He'll put his foot on the gas pedal for as long and as hard as he can in 4 quarters. And that leads me to believe that Georgia's probably the right side.
Let's keep it in the SEC there. Kentucky traveling to take on number 7 Tennessee. Line around 17 at this point right now. The bottom's falling out on Kentucky in the SEC, particularly. I believe it was 2 games ago, getting 40-plus points dropped on them. Can Tennessee cover that 16.5 to 17 points in this game this weekend?
I mean, how much does Kentucky have, like, you know, the sort of chutzpah and the self-respect to not get rolled up on again for a third straight week? I genuinely don't know the answer to that. They sort of look like they've quit. You know, the big thing here for Tennessee is, like, you know, the offense still, since the, you know, Kent State game where they scored 71 and we all thought they were the best team in the world, 25, 14, 23 in OT and 24. This is a really good defense still. And I would like to think that Mark Stoops and the Kentucky crew are going to sit here and go, "What? We might lose this game, but we're not going to get beaten like that." So I know it's Neyland Stadium. I know it's really tough for them to win or, you know, for Kentucky to win this game on the road. But, you know, this number just feels a little bit too large for my taste.
Seventh SEC game already for the Cats. They've been favored in four. They've lost all four of those outright in their two as an underdog. The huge upset in Oxford against Ole Miss and a tight one-point game against Georgia. Tennessee, who could not cover a number to start this year, had the best cover percentage in the country, now has not covered in their last two as the favored side. Both laying two touchdowns under in four straight for the Vols. To your point, Zeno, 191 points in the first three games of this year in total, 25 or less in their last four. Let's go around the SEC. Expected to be a close one, Zeno, in Columbia on Saturday. South Carolina and A&M. Texas A&M made a statement on Saturday with Marcel Reed coming back to beat LSU. Feels a little bit fishy and trappy. Can A&M avoid the upset?
I mean, I think South Carolina is going to end up being the sharp square dog this weekend. I mean, everybody's jumping on South Carolina. The number screams it, right? Like, why is the 10th team in the country only laying less than a field goal to a South Carolina team that at times this year has looked really bad? You know, it seems like it, you know, and for me, it's one of those things where I would kind of wait on this thing and see where the number goes on Saturday. But I think South Carolina is the sharp square dog here, and A&M probably will end up winning this one handily.
Yeah, it feels like that look as well, as, you know, a very peculiar number. Is it correct? We shall see. We thank you, Mark Zeno. We thank you for expressing your anger at the Yankees. Now go relax, my friend. Hour three up next.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.